a grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Okay, folks, how are you all doing? Near the end of March, you're welcome along to the Irish Examiner's Hurling Show. We're back, baby, as the fella says. Wanted to come back before Cheltenham, but TJ Ryan said no. He needed a bit of time to study and the priorities had to be gotten right. But look, this morning, we weren't too sure, but then we saw that the ever-given boat has moved in the Suez Canal. So we said it's time to get going. So we made a few phone calls and we're ready to go. I know it wasn't quite that simple now. It was planned, but delighted. The two usual Latchikos are here, TJ and Marco, and delighted this morning on his Easter holidays to be joined by Derek. Derek, how's things?
How are you going, Dale? How are you? Not too bad now.
Good, Derek. Good now, yeah. All good, yeah. It's a kind of a funny time. We'd be a good bit into the league now, wouldn't we? And we'd have probably been on our fifth or sixth show, I suppose, at this stage. And I just thought one of the gas things was yesterday, like, just Twitter, farting around, looking at Twitter. I was actually waiting for the golf to start to watch the whole match playing the golf. But I see one up from Tomás O'Connor, former Cork midfielder. And he kind of basically said, would love to be on the way to Pierce Stadium today. Now, pouring rain and wind in the West Coast anyway yesterday. And he said it'd be a good barometer of what's needed, to be followed quickly by a tweet from his former teammate. I think he's still in Canada, John Gardner, Mark, is he? And yeah, he said, I was always busy the week before Pierce Stadium. But I think now, lads, we'd pay to go up and be stuck in traffic in Salt Hill for an hour and a half to get to a league game, wouldn't we?
It's ferocious, Dela. Yeah, I love your dumpy introduction there. We're back, baby.
Is that back, baby? Yeah. Well, that was one of the things from the other night. You know, poor old Stevie Kenny. That's the downside of Twitter at the moment.
I know. Yeah. And I'm still not on Twitter, boy, and I'm not going to give in there. No chance.
You don't need, as I've always said all through last year, Mark, you don't need to be on Twitter. You have enough of your spies out there that are bringing you back all the necessary stuff. Yeah, Larry's in the dark there somewhere. But he's there. Larry, lovely piece you wrote on Stephen Kenny and the whole Irish setup. Thought it was balanced, Larry, unlike some people. Fair play.
Thanks, Dale. I was thinking of TJ actually last night. Are we going to stick to the plan?
Stick to the plan, lads.
Yeah, I know how Stephen Kenny feels. And I think we need to stick to the plan.
You never really had a Luxembourg moment, though, TJ, had you?
Jeez, it was close once or twice, Dale, I think. I don't really want to go back to that era now that we've kind of... We've gone past the threshold and we've moved on. Yeah, let's as Larry said, let's stick to the plan and talk about the current.
Yeah, we'll get to all that. We'll get to all that. As Cheltenham was good tea, was it?
It was okay. Yeah, the results were okay. I'd say we probably were all in the same boat with Invoyaland and maybe Shacklin Pushwa. We went down to Swanee, but from a breeding point of view, it was successful enough. Now, lucky enough for the Hastings at Alaha. I would have called Fall about 3.5 weeks ago. So I was delighted to see that horse being the highest rated horse now after Cheltenham. And they also have an interest in Ellie May, who finished the half in second to Cool Reeve. So the half sister to that as well, who happens to be a full sister to Goshen. So
yeah, I was thinking about your map when I saw Goshen going a bit all over the shop, going down the back straight.
A bit temperamental, all right now, like, you know, a bit like John Milan, maybe, and whatever. He gave Sonny O'Brien Murphy an old poke, like, you know.
He didn't finish like John Milan, though.
No, definitely not. I didn't get the result either, but say he'd probably be better off going right-handed, and I hope I see him in punches down, to be honest with it. But it was just to be able to watch the races more than anything, to be honest, and great coverage again. But the big thing is, like, to win, of the 23 out of the 28 races were won by Irish trainers, a lot of different owners as well, and a lot of the small men, we said Paul Hennessy and Gavin Cromwell and guys like that who were having the first and second winners there in Cheltenham. So it wasn't all William Mullins and Henry de Bromhead, which was fantastic. But it's great for the sport in Ireland, and long may it continue.
Yeah, it's a bit lonesome, all right, having to watch it on your own at home and stuff like that. But I actually went down to the pub on the Friday on my own.
Oh, Jesus.
A couple of cans of Guinness watching the Gold Cup on my own. Like,
I sent a few
pictures to the lads. Where are you? They're saying, I'm blowing the pub. What? I said, I'm here on my own. Like, that's lonesome. Do you follow it, Derek?
No, not really, but it was emotional enough for us this year. My father passed away at Christmas, and he was obviously, he actually met TJ a few times now in Cheltenham. I think over the years, if TJ might remember, my father was probably starstruck meeting TJ. So, in actual fact, he was one of those few that he snuck to Cheltenham last year, I suppose, and he shouldn't. We collected him off the plane. He was one of the fellas that was in hiding, quarantine for 2 weeks after he came home. I collected him last year on the 13th of March. And I remember, you know, we had actually finished school that day. It was the first day of the lockdown, I think, and I collected him on the Friday in Dublin Airport, and himself and my uncle, James, and brought him home. And I remember my mother stripped him at the door, you know. She'd get off all those clothes and put him into the washing machine. And yeah, he was a fanatic on Cheltenham now, loved the horses, you know, loved the hurling of the horses. And he's gone there for the last, I suppose, religiously for the last 12 years. And yeah, this year was emotional now because he passed away over the Christmas, and tough watching it now. But look, I'd be one of those fellas, when we're in UCC, you think you know something about the horses. And during Cheltenham, you'd be down there with the pen in the ear and you're listening to everyone more so than anything else. So I'd know nothing about it, but I suppose Cheltenham or the Gold Cup, traditionally in the house, we'd kind of have a few bets. But other than that, wouldn't have a real interest in it. But, you know, be listening in, I suppose, as to the progress of the Irish all the same.
Yeah, I'd say, like, with your bit of spending money in college and you're kind of having the pencil in the ear, and then you're looking at the spending money by the end of the week, so it's a good crack, all right, like, but...
Yeah, you're thumbing home then, as opposed to getting the bus, like, you know? And you bring the hurley in the bag, you're always guaranteed a lift to kill it, you know?
Yeah. That was a great trick of mine. I went to LIT for about 4 months, and I suppose I'd be getting the bus money off the mother, like...
Yeah.
And kitchen, like, but it was the main road that time, no motorway. Yeah. But I've now Flannan's bag and a hurley. You couldn't fail to get a lift back to the village by a Friday evening or a Thursday. 100%. Yeah. So that's a brilliant story about your dad, like, especially.
I don't remember meeting him, Derek. No, maybe it's such a like.
Yeah, he'd be kind of probably, you know, not starstruck, but he'd probably just say, he'd come home and he'd say to me, I saw over there was TJ Ryan, and I was staying in the same hotel as Sean Vaughan Brenock, and I was. He wouldn't really approach people as such, but he'd cop them, for want of a better word. You know, he'd kind of say, oh, yeah, I saw him. I saw Jimmy Barry, for instance. He'd often see you over there, I think, you know, as well. So he'd be kind of copping fellas that he'd know would be interested in the horses. And he'd relay it back to me. So he's like Mark Land, our spies. He was my spy on the ground over in Chelsea. What was going on, you know?
And dad, had TJ Ryan much drink when you met him?
I've been a regular to Cheltenham for the last 12 years as well. 2009 was my first year going. I have to say, like, National Hunt Racing would be one of my passions in life. Hurling, obviously, National Hunt Racing, then I'd read up on it every single week. I love it. I love the buzz of being on one that's tanking coming down the hill, and you think that you're on one coming down to the last. To me, it's one of the real kind of drugs of life, trying to make sure that you pick the right one. Got a bit of luck on the Friday. I text my buddies Matt Landers and Anthony Daly with a 40-1 shot on the Friday, Derek. And both of them thought I was talking
Belfast Banter
on Friday. Yeah,
believe so it.
I got some good quid, but I got plenty of them wrong too. Like, so that's the beauty of National Dressing. But in terms of buzz,
just before you go on, sorry, you did say at the bottom of the text, like, not really a tip.
No, I told you it wasn't really. It was my own pick. I just picked the line of form in grade two, where he had finished well behind Not So Sleepy, who had run well in the Champion Hurling the Tuesday, Dalo, as I explained to you again, but it was my own pick. But in terms of sporting occasions, it is as good as they come. And to me, this year, I think the crowd was a massive loss. I just can imagine, like, Rachel Blackmore, the heights that she reached in 2021, I think, over there, in fairness to the English and the Irish, they take to somebody. Like, over the years, the likes of Mackay and Ruby and Barry Geraghty, Davy Russell, they've really taken to them over the years. I see Rachel as being a huge fan's favourite. I'd say the reception she would have got this year would have been phenomenal. And, like, what a display. And, like, just, as I said, sure, in terms of sporting achievements, for me, it's as big as they come in recent times, I can show you that.
Yeah, it's actually the Irish sporting story, I'd say, 2021 so far in here, for sure, and we'll be there right soon. And the amount of lads, we'll start talking about hurling now in a minute, but amount of lads that I've been talking to since on the phone or text message, you know, whatever, and I definitely go on next year. You know?
Yeah, and that is the general consensus is that hopefully over, I suppose, the next couple of months that things will start to ease up, even though the numbers on a daily basis are still very high. But there is a huge appetite for people to spend money, and I think there will be some, you know, a lot of people are predicting a recession. I think it could be quite the opposite in actual fact. Like, there were people busting to go on holidays, go and spend money and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's going to be a huge surge. They'll come. But people, you know, there's no harm that this thing has happened because it has taken away. I think, you know, a lot of people have actually come back down to ground level and are starting back talking to people, and not, this pace of life has slowed down dramatically. And they're rebuilding relationships with people that they haven't maybe spoken to for years. I think that the pandemic, that is one thing that has come out of the pandemic, like, you know.
Yeah, maybe a bit, 6 months, a bit too long, though, I think, you know. But look, yeah, look at everyone has their own take on it. And I suppose, look, that's, there's no doubt, NPHET are meeting today, and there's talk. And it was, we seem to, since this thing started, live in a land of leaks, like, before Micheál Martin comes on and gives us a bit of poetry and a bit of Irish. We all know what he's going to say in early this year. So huge amount of leaks and huge amount of excitement, I suppose, in the GAA world as well, like that. It seems to be there that the inter-county is going to get the go-ahead from maybe Monday week. Today, fortnight, is it? They're talking about the 12th. It'd be great boost again, wouldn't it? And just for yourself, Derek, I know you just got the Easter holidays, I know, from the girls here as well, but back at school and all that, like, underage is so badly needed to get back, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, like, the irony of it is we got 25 guys in the class, you know, and we can't actually go into a full pitch that we have here in front of the school, you know, and it's crazy, really. So, but I think that's going to be addressed. I think it's, you know, I was just reading some articles about that, even the whole statistics around the mental health of the kids and how they've suffered, particularly during the lockdown. So I think that's coming down the tracks, and I think it's needed. Even on top of what schools are without already, you know, every school is, you know, from your own school days, lads, you know, there's 4 or 5 buses leave the school every day between, you know, you might be going to the you know, the clown championships, you might be going to the hurling match, soccer match, whatever, TY trips, they're all gone. So they're suffering anyway as a result of that lack of that engagement, if you like, in school, and the extracurricular stuff, the choir, whatever it is. And on top of that, not to be able to play, if you like, or meet and congregate for training, I think that's going to be addressed, and it has to be addressed, really, because we have to be trusted in that regard in clubs. You know, I have the under-8s in our own club now, and you know, for us to be able to get together 2 or 3 times a week in a safe environment, which we had been doing in the middle up to before Christmas, will be great again for those kids and for the younger. I have a teenager as well. I have a 15-year-old. Doing junior cert or not doing junior cert now, whatever. But you know, he needs the two. I think we can all vouch for that, like, you know.
Yeah, and TJ, your role as director of hurling there in the Gary Spillane Underage Academy. But no, like, just TJ, bring it back to your own. Like, you see it on the ground. Like, lads, even mentors are getting anxious at this stage, aren't they?
Yeah, we're all met for road. Like, I'm agreeing with Derek there. We're not living with COVID. I'm not a doctor or a scientist, and I never will be, but I think that a lot of things could have been done over the last month, like whether it's golf or tennis or GA, whatever your sport is. I think that there was a way which could have been maybe managed better for the month. I am really hoping that we will get to go ahead. I'm with the under-15s in Gary's plan for the coming year, and that we will be able to get onto the pitch. The one thing I'm going to go back to Derek on there, right, is, like, I was middle of the road in school, right? And in my last year in school, right, we were in the B side of the senior hurling. Like, that senior hurling in its leaving cert in 6th year for us, that was so important for us. We lived for nearly the 5 years of going through school, kind of talking about that, knowing this was coming, right? Like, the guys missing out on that, you'd have to feel deeply sorry for him. And the other thing was, like, I went to college for 2 years, then we fell out. I'm not sure whether I fell out with college or college fell out with me, right? That's a different story, right? But the freshers, right? First year going to college, right? And, like, that's where you meet your real colleagues and your friends, and you build something for the rest of your college days. So, like, yes, it's very important for the underage, but there's 2 little segments there, and I'm sure all segments are important. I just feel really sorry. Like, those guys could have missed out on a generation of a friendship. It's incredible. I was going to get Derek's take on it, really.
Yeah, and look, just to kind of, to reiterate that, I suppose I was in the doing the water for the Harty team 2 years ago. They were beaten by a last minute goal by Middleton, and I was in the dressing room afterwards, and I always say this, but the sense of togetherness and the, I suppose the tragic nature of the dressing room in terms of tears, but the memories created in school are often the greatest memories, you know. And we won in 07 and 08 here, which still massive friendships. The lads had, and we have a fanatic of a teacher here, Dermot Dooley, who did the teams with me in 07 and 08. Brilliant, brilliant guy from Coolderry originally. And he had the Harty team ready to go. He had gear ordered. He had kind of extra tuition organised for him. He was making sure it was a journey for the lads. And we'd have a panel of 47 or 48, TJ, as well. We'd have fellas on the panel like that. They might be in trouble in school and you'd bring them with you, like just to get them out of the classroom for the day. It'd be less hassle for the teachers. A completely inclusive kind of attitude to the whole Harty. And it'd be a brilliant journey for them as much as it would be for the TJ Ryans or the Anthony Daly or Mark Landers, the stars of the team, if you like. They just love being involved in the buzz of the Harty at every level, from first year up to sixth year. And yeah, they're missing out on that. As for the freshers, just to bring it back to 94, I was a fresher in UCC in 94, and Shamie Maher and Richie Woods were actually the managers, and John Kiley was actually and Jerry Maguire were great mates. They were on the Fitzgibbon team, and the crack we had, like, as regards, you know, down in Cork, it was my first time leaving home, I suppose, as regards kind of a novel kind of young fella from Waterford City, you head down to Cork, and the crack that they're missing out on is incredible, you know what I mean? And it's hard to get that back in terms of the forging of key friendships that you have for years. So, so when people talk about well-being and they talk about mental health, it's not an exaggeration to say that they're suffering, is what I'm saying, you know, without being an expert in the area. I'm just a teacher here normally, but, you know, the lads are wearing masks, they're muted anyway, they're down in themselves, and it's genuine, is what I'm saying, and it's real, and it's authentic, and it's very hard to get those times back. So we need to kind of, not that we need to open up, and again, I'll qualify, I'm not a scientist or anything like that, but we need to kind of just be able to manage them a bit better so that they'll slowly get back to what they're capable of being, if you like, you know.
You can't get back that fresher year. Like, can your daughter, myself now, UCC, and she spent 3 nights in Cork, you know, and just like, just there you go. Like, you know, it's just, I know, Mark, you're right about the ground, and I think for a lot of us and all, but I just think that generation, hopefully, you know, they'll get a break or two along the way, and people will be, I think, a bit kind to that generation, and we'll look at that in how it has affected them. Mark, what would you be hoping? What would you be hoping we get to go ahead for, being realistic as well, Mark? Like, you know, we're not going to be all in the local field tomorrow night or that. But being realistic, what would you hope that the GA, I know the GA now meet tomorrow evening, I think tomorrow afternoon, to consider what the government have said?
I would expect from a club point of view, I don't see there being any reason why minors downwards shouldn't be allowed to go to the pitch. I think, like, I have two lads, Matthew and Charlie, 5 and 7. They are going to national school every day of the week. So, as Derek mentioned about classroom size of 25 or 30 at the moment. So, they're mingling within a group there on a regular basis every day of the week. So, there should be no reason why those young lads can't be allowed down to the field on a regular basis. Like, that would be from a club point of view. I'd be hoping that adult club players would be allowed to go back in pods, maybe a 15, entity the same as we had maybe last year. They should be allowed to go training out in the open air. Certainly listening to any of the inter-county fellas that I've met before, they're really ticked off of the individual training. We always did a bit ourselves, right? Okay, when you were, you know, you'd be starting back with Cork or Waterford or Clare or Limerick, maybe the first week of February or something, and you said, geez, you know what, I 4 weeks, I better do a bit myself, I should knock the old soft bits off, you like, you know.
3 kilometer run.
And about 4 stops in between.
I give up the biscuits.
So I think, like, listen to all these lads, they're really ticked off of the individual training, and they're missing their buddies as well as in the county. And you know, you spoke about it. I didn't have the luxury. I never went to college, lad. But I can imagine what it did feel like, because I must say, when I left the inter-county scene, my heart was broken for about 12 months, because there was fellas who were meeting there for 7 or 8 years on a Tuesday and a Thursday night and a match of the weekend, and there was great friendships and bonds were built up. Yeah, do we stay in contact with not a whole pile? I would say, you know, we wouldn't have the big, massive relationship in Cork, I would say, once the game is finished and once you've moved on, life kind of moves on. Maybe to the big county, we don't mingle or don't meet fellas on a regular basis. But I must say I did struggle the first 12 months after leaving the intercounty scene, missing those lads as you've been with for the previous, you know, 7 or 8 years. But as captain
of the winning team in 99, oh, your responsibility is to get them all together for a game of golf at Christmas. Well, that's the job. And don't mind the golf. Don't be worried about the golf.
Yeah.
The 10 or 12 hardcore play the golf with the crowd.
You will. I agree with you. I must say now, we were invited by the GPA to Croke Park last year we were a 20-year reunion, but there was 5 different. So it was 10 years, 20, 30, 40, and 50 years. The previous, and just guess now, the guys from 50 years ago, nearly all of them were there. Yeah. And then our guys, there was about 12 of our team there. And then the Kilkenny team who were 10, there was only 2 or 3 of them there. So it seemed to be something, Anthony, as the older you got, the more, geez, you know what, I better turn up to this thing because I mustn't get another one. But we met at that night and we had a great night. We ended up actually down in the Boar's Head, a place that you know well. And we were there and we actually met up with Michael Fenley and David Harty. We had a good chat with them. But Paul Montgomery, so we used to go to Rearman's an awful lot back in 99, but Monty opened a new pub inside in town in Clancy's, and himself and Sully were on to me about the 20 year, that we'd do something for the 20 years, and we reopened his new pub, Clancy's, and nearly all the team came to it. And Wayne Sherlock, he's sticking out my mind, said, Mark, I need to do this on a more regular basis, because I'm after, we've relived stories tonight. So yeah, responsibility. But you know, I must say, the bonds and the friendships that we had that made up that winning team were rekindled. And you know, you can do it too often as well, Dale. Like, you know,
you can. Yeah. Well, we've the Christmas now, and it's good. Like, and some lads can't make it certain years, but you know, they nearly always get in 1 out of 5.
Would you get in? Would you do a Christmas party every year? Like once.
We would. We would. Oh, we would. Yeah, every single year since I'd say about 2001, 2002. Once fella started signing to stop and playing, it's hard right, going. Okay. At Christmas, did all, and it's we leave it open now. All the lads, modern, you know, fellas that weren't on our panel at all, they come and they enjoy the night as well. Like, you know, right, even okay. You know, the Dermot McMahons and the Tony Griffins and all those lads and anyone. Jerry O'Grady, all those lads come along, and hopefully the 13 lads now start coming along as well. And it's great. Okay. It's great. All, you know, we just leave it open to them all. And there's probably 80 quid up front, lads. It's 80 quid golf and your B&B. And we try and, you know, sort things in. But in context, talk about phone calls. And
yeah.
I know a fella there. That's good crack. But look, as we'd be, what, TJ, just to bring it back, we see the year as staying sort of according to plan. We'd be hoping that county will get it, maybe divided up league. I know there's fierce talk. The league would be 12 teams in the league, so groups of 3, maybe with the top teams going straight to the semi-final. So everyone gets a couple of league games, and if you're and maybe a relegation as well, and then proceeding with the inter-county and it all finishing up in August, hopefully, and then handing the rest of the year over to the club, because the split season has been. We'll talk about Congress in a minute. Congress have gone with that now, but we're still in an exceptional time, I suppose. But we're hoping that stays to that, at least. Although clubs did expect to be back about a month before that.
Yeah, but today, I speak for most of the country and any of the people I spoke to, is the vibe is that from April the 12th, right, that the inter-county will get that 4-week lead-in, right, and start playing league games in May and then in June. And as you said there, the championship will begin after that. Yes, it'll be a kind of downsized league, but you look at this stage, we'll take whatever we can get. The thing, I suppose, you said Neffert and the government meet today, right? If that gets knocked on the head and we don't get to go ahead from April 12th, well, then I think we're heading into the never-never then. I don't know what exactly is the next phase then, Dillo. I'll be fierce disappointed, as I said, personally, from our own point of view, trying to get going with my own kids and different, right? And then not being able to see inter-county action from May will be a massive knock-on effect. What are the downsides? The club season runs a little bit late, but again, in these difficult times, we'll take whatever we can get. If you got going there from sometime in August into September, like, you could run club championships right into November. I'm assuming the extended piece of the club is the Munster Club. Is that part of the parcel to go forward from this year? That piece could run maybe into January, February next year. That wouldn't be the end of the world.
No.
Very much hanging on this conversation today, Dillo. If that goes against us, Jason, I don't know where we go then.
I think if it goes against us, Derek, we're looking at a winter All Ireland again, are we? And the club's not getting a Munster club, just play your club championship like last year. And geez, at this stage, like, I mean, we're approaching the 1st of April rapid, like, so.
Yeah, I'm going to be optimistic and say it's not going to go against us, even though I know nothing about it. I think, and look, I'm delighted with the, not just, you know, from a collective point of view, but even a personal level. I know our lads in De La Salle, they were kind of banking on, you know, the later championship, if you like. You know, the kind of, you know, they were kind of saying, we won't go back to Paddy's Day and we'll tip away rather than, you know, some people might, I know the year before, or 2 years before that, our own club went back early December, like, you know, because, or sorry, late December, knowing that they get two league games in, or two championship games in April, and then they'll be back over to the, so I think they've, you know, that's just a purely probably selfish viewpoint on it. But yeah, I think, you know, getting, and I think it's an opportunity for the clubs, believe it or not, to have a social summer, if you like. And I know that's, I'm not promoting now that they'll be in pubs or that, but you could be up in the field on a Saturday evening.
I'll leave you in the pub.
Yeah, you know, no, but be up in the field on Saturday evenings this year, you know, in the club and playing good challenge matches, if you like, and maybe have something set up outdoors in a safe environment and that kind of crack where you can, last year was a little bit rushed for all the clubs where you're kind of squeezing in challenge matches over three or four. Now you could possibly be, if the clubs are allowed back in May, that you could be looking at May, June, July as a 3 month window in preparation whilst the intercounty is on in terms of good incentivized leagues or good challenge matches, good training. And then hopefully, I'm sure as well, Anthony, that if your own team are out of the inter-county championship, there's a leeway there perhaps to get your club championship started a little bit earlier, you know. So I'd imagine they'll put in that as an old caveat or a provisional kind of fixture list, you know.
Yeah, it'll be up to yourself, I presume. And if you want to go up to the Kilmacrook Sevens, that'll be up to yourself. Like, if you have 3 weeks to spare. A lovely picture, actually, I saw, and it came up in a Limerick GAA of 2003, I think, winners in Kilmacud, and there was lads in it that I didn't think would be too suited to sevens. Now, Donny Ryan would, but TJ Ryan, I never saw him as a sevens player really, but you were winners all right, TJ.
Winners all right, yeah. I was showing Mark our route to the final there recently. Would you believe it if I told you this? In 2003, when we won the sevens, we beat Killer in the quarter final, right? And there was a certain man on this show who played in goals for Killer that day. Imagine that.
He must have been up there Friday night.
Can you believe it? In Kilmacud, right, in seven aside, in a full-size pitch, right, we beat Cratlow in the semi-final. We beat them 8 points to seven. There was no goal scored.
No goal.
Of a seven semi-final. Hard to believe.
I will Podge and Conor McGrann, all the MNO three were, you know, they were only under 15.
Thank God.
You were dealing with Ron O'Hara, if you like that. Like,
how did you find that?
Conor picture? Galvin.
How did you find that picture?
I saw it on Limerick website or something like that. It was very good. I was going through it. I said, Donny, I would like to know Donny the sevens. I said, it was a great one with Clarecastle. Like, as if we ever went up the night before to the sevens, you know, planned it, booked a hotel maybe for Friday night, Saturday night, or a hostel or whatever. Yeah. We had no hope in the sevens. I was not going to keep the boys in Friday night, can imagine. But if we went up, we left Clarecastle at 6 o'clock in the morning on the Saturday, we'd rattle it and we got to two finals and lost them. But that was the rule too. When are we going? Someone would say, oh, no, I'll leave you off then if it was going up Friday night as a plan. Yeah. I remember standing in the field before a first round and thinking everything was right. I was up in Dublin working at Timac, whatever, probably still with the bank, but I was out in the field on my own with a Clarecastle jersey on me, and the whole Rat Downey team, or, you know, the whole team, but 10 of them were below warming up, and the lads were getting out of the cars. And Stephen Sheedy got out of the car with a can of Coke and a rasher sandwich. And while he was trying to put on his gear, I just went like, God, Jesus, what? They were coming up Saturday morning, but I think they met up to organise the lifts on Friday evening. Yeah. And someone said, we go for one. And of course, they wound up in the Queens. Oh, lads, those were the days, huh?
I'll never forget, we were up there 1 year and we had 10 players the night before and one fella cried off. And we went up the night before and we struggled to get a 10th fella, but we found a fella anyway. But he arrived, and it was lashing rain out the same day and we were playing, but he arrived and he had no string in his shorts, and I can remember him sawing up the field. and the pants was falling down, right? So he had one hand and the pants trying to keep it up and he was falling away. And I just said, I thought Ray Ratchell was with me on the side and I said, Ray, that just epitomises the club and the involvement of lads, like, you know. Oh, Jesus. So, Golly, if you're listening out, my friend, we had many a good laugh over that solo run that you made.
Yeah, there could be a book. I think someone in Kilmacud at some stage should just take the time and write a book and get interviews on the Sevens weekend. Like, oh, yeah. Great crack. Did you ever go at it there? You did it probably.
We said a good few years. Well, back in the early days, 95, I remember. Actually, the year, was it 95 you beat Offaly? Was it 95? Yeah. I remember watching the final that year. We were beaten by Port Roe, but Ballygalgett and Gorin were in the final. And the two up front for Gorin were DJ and Charlie Carter. So try and hold them now in the seven.
The seven defender will be coming into play there.
Oh, geez, and the eight.
Jesus, well, no thanks. Be Connor back in that one. Let's see if you were in the Queen's night before.
And the irony of it was, Pat O'Neill was at the back and he was lording it. And you think a big fella is not suited to it sometimes. He used to just stand there and the keeper would ping it to him and he had great hands as well, Pat O'Neill, you know. So it was just, sometimes you can see, you know, you can feel it suited towards the speedsters. But some fellas are handy at it too, you know. The hurlers are handy at it too, you know. Pat O'Neill was really good at it.
And that's why Killa put Mark Landers back to goal. But no, the goalie is absolutely crucial in it, though.
Yeah.
To be able to solo out and pick a 50-yard good ball. We used to always nearly play a lad out the field in goal, like, you know, because you get a resting goal if you're up a few pints and that kind of thing. But I look at it, it's great. We digress anyway, as usual. But some things never change. That's good. Well, lads, look, we're very clear. We're hoping for good news the next couple of days and we all get back at it to a certain extent. We know everything can't open. As we had a huge congress, in some ways it went under the radar a little bit with the times that are in it, I feel. And maybe you would have thought that would be the opposite, but I just thought things were not debated maybe as much as usual for the changes we have. And we have huge changes, lads. You know what I mean? For the first time and we were all, well, I was one of the ones that was, don't bring in the black card, hurling. And maybe that was our own bit of snottiness in the hurling world as well. But we have it now, TJ, anyway. And to specific enough, I suppose, this for a deliberate takedown inside the 20-metre line. No, it's not. You could pull a fella's hurley. I think that's not.
I'm anti this change.
Okay, talk to us. Why, TJ?
First of all, I think there's enough pressure on the referees at the moment. I think that they're struggling to get all the key decisions right in a particular game. I think a little bit like VAR in the UK, I think the specifics of this one, right? So my belief, right, is that if it's a cynical foul inside the 20-metre line, that the penalty is a black card and a penalty for the attacking team, right? So the questions I have is, what is a cynical foul exactly, right, which would be wide open for debate. I think, like, if you take it away inside the 20-metre line, out towards the sideline, does that constitute a penalty? I think major call late in the game to get that as a cynical foul. And I think it's putting more and more pressure on the referee. You will get, obviously, the attackers playing for it. I think this one is a recipe for disaster. How much of a factor is it going to be with games late on? Like, me playing at full back in my day, right? Cynical foul definitely was there, Dalo. I don't need to remind you of that, right? But now I just do it outside the 20-meter line. So if you foul somebody cynically 22 meters out, is the black card in? My take on it is it's not, right? Is it a penalty? No, it's not. So I don't see the point of it and I'm against it.
It's in for a year's trial, Mark would say. So, I mean, we're going to look at it for the year. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
At inter-county level, I could see that it could, you know, with all everyone wired up and helping each other and that kind of thing. But club level, it could be just... Is it in club level, lads, fully as well, for a trial for a year?
I actually don't know.
I'm not certain about that, no.
Being genuine.
Sure, do you know that, Derek?
I'm not sure now, to be honest with you. I'm not sure.
I think it is. But look...
I think it is, yeah.
What's your take on it, Mark? Are you calling it?
My take on it is I am pro the black card, to be honest with you, because... You're right. Like, we picked out basically three or four incidents last year right throughout the pod for me. And the first one was the Denny Sutcliffe one, which comes back to TJ's point. Like, he did that about 45 metres out. He flaked him in across the leg, and it was obvious what he was doing. That was the first time that I really saw a real physical tackle, a cynical tackle.
Yeah, but just on that, Mark, before you go on, yeah. I watched it this morning because I said, just a quick look, he was about 4 metres inside the 45, you're bang on.
Right.
He actually didn't, and I had in my head that Denny would be good pal of mine, obviously, for my time in Dublin, but Paddy Purcell had the ball, fastest man in the country nearly when you get it on full floor, and was going away, like. He actually only caught his hurley around where the tape had been near the boss. And he deliberately, totally cynically went down. And he didn't pull now. He just flicked the two legs.
But he knew what he
was doing. But it was cynical. That's the distance it was out like.
Yeah. So like, now that is not a penalty, right? So it can't be a warning because it's not inside the 20. But it definitely, it warrants more than a yellow card. And I think I said last year, I thought it warranted a red card, Anthony, at that time, because I thought it was cynical, right? He could have thrown himself at it and put his hurley out, put his head down and tripped him. But he was looking at his leg, and he did strike him with the hurley. So, but like, there was more incidents that followed where there was actually clear goal scoring opportunities that were denied. Your man in the middle of the field for Limerick did it on one occasion, and there was another incident between Galway and Kilkenny. Now,
outside the 21, though, Mark.
But no, I thought those ones were inside the 21.
Well, the ones were outside for sure.
But he didn't say which one, TJ. Why did you give it away? He said midfield.
The biggest issue will be, and this is where I was saying, I think it should be inside the semicircle, that area there, where there's a clear and obvious goal scoring opportunity. I think if it's out in the wings and it's inside the 21, that's not a clear, obvious goal scoring opportunity. Now, so whether it's like you're giving a penalty, which is creating the free to give you a goal scoring opportunity. So I think it should be down to a goal scoring opportunity and then be awarding the penalty and be giving the black card. I think coming back to the thing about the pressure on the referees, I think the GAA needs to up their game on the technology and the use of technology. I agree that VAR is over the top, but I think that the rugby have it down to a fine art. There's no pressure.
Slower game.
But TJ, if you're a punter and you're a player, so just take it from a punter's point of view, right? Okay, you're going to be chatting through with yourself. You're looking up at the big screen. You're having a debate. You're discussing it. It creates a bit of an atmosphere. Now, if you're a player, like a couple of years ago, whereby TJ, he ended up not being in the All-Ireland final because of the 65 that wasn't awarded to you. You may never have won the game, but you were entitled to a 65 that would have leveled the game 2 years ago. That technology would have sorted that, TJ. And that the biggest thing for me is that the technology is actually there. It just needs to be used properly, because when it comes down the stretch on the important matches, everybody wants the fair outcome, TJ. Come here, a couple of years ago, your minors were done out of an All-Ireland final as well because of a 45 that wasn't awarded. So,
I do think technology has answered a lot of issues, right? But how far do you go back? There's too many questions there for me with technology. The three or four basics I had for referees were, right, was I think the fourth official could really help the referee by taking the time off him, taking the score off him, right? Taking all those clerical things, right? And just ask the referee just to concentrate on the actual refereeing of the game, right? Things like the subs coming on and all that kind of stuff, right? All handled by the fourth official. That can easily be transferred, right? I think that would be a big move. Like, just, there has to be pressure on the referee going down the stretch where he's looking at his watch. There's a point in the game. It has to be taken away from him. I think that would be a great start. The other thing I was going to come to, Dalo, and you definitely did this to me back in the day, right? Take the scenario, you're inside cornerback, right? Throwing your flag, no National League, and you get after a tough winter, right?
Right? See you on the Devon for one, TJ.
we're inside the 14-yard line, right? Tight, right? So anything that's a ball whipped from 70 or 80 yards, right? So you have a good hold to me, right? Right? Is that cynical? To me, it is. So yeah. are we saying now that potentially, right, that if the referee sees a tug of the jersey, right, in that instance, which is part and parcel of the hurling game, right, that we're now looking at a black card and a penalty? Fucking madness.
TJ, that's not cynical. Come on, you know the four or five incidents that we looked at last year that we reviewed. They were totally over the top. Listen, any fella that's on this has played and has been physical and tough But we never did the cynical stuff that was done last year. There was three or four specific incidents, and they were obviously cynical, TJ. Come on.
Yeah, when you think, like, we mentioned Denny's one, right? So the other ones we think of is maybe Adrian Toohey taking down Shamie Callan, Derek.
Correct. Again,
earlier in the game, Ronan Maher taking down Conor Whelan.
Yeah.
Because we've been going catching Conor Whelan. Let's say who's catching. But what's your overall take, Derek? The essence of it. I think the essence of it is slightly wrong.
Yeah, I think it's a wordy debate anyway, I think, first and foremost. You know, because we can't be totally, completely snobbery about the game, etc. So I think the penalty is nearly enough without the kind of 10 minutes, if you like. You know, that's what I'd be. The difficulty is the one that the lads have pointed out, interpretation. Like, I watched the Will O'Donoghue one back this morning. They were ahead of this. I said, yes. I'll watch it back. And it was in the arc, like, where Will O'Donoghue took Stephen Bennett, right? So I was thinking to myself, right, at that stage, if you slow it down, then Cian Lynch, Dan Morrissey, and Sean Finn actually end up in front of Stephen Bennett after kind of Will O'Donoghue, who just kind of stops him, if you like. And you have Barry Nash, and I'm not sure who else are marking right on the edge of it. So is it a goal scoring opportunity when there's possibly two other defenders in front of Stephen Bennett after the Will O'Donoghue, and there's four actually defenders? So it's the interpretation of, from a referee's point of view, like, is that a clear goal scoring opportunity? Like the old professional foul in the soccer when a fella is true one on one and you clip him. I have no problem with that. I think that's a penalty. The other thing is the point that TJ just made. Your coaching, and TJ's up in St. Thomas is there over the last number of years, and you're coaching this kind of honesty in the tackle and putting your body on the line and, you know, putting your body on the line for your club and your county. And I think we love watching those kind of, and so to say, manliness kind of the tackle, but that kind of fervour that goes with the tackle. And you just be worried that there'll be an element of kind of playing for the penalty, you know, when you get it in there, you know, it'll be too sanitised, if you like, you know, the game. And I just, you know, I'd be worried about that element of it. So for me, I think the debate is worthy. I think the yellow card plus the penalty, if it's inside the arc card plus the 21 is worthy. But I think the 10 minutes at the end are, you know, putting a fella into a sin bin was probably, I would deem it unnecessary, if you like. But I don't know. That'll be my kind of opinion on it. Like, but it's the interpretation on the referee's behalf. And I see Willie Barrett and some of the referees said that it won't be much involved for them. But I beg to differ. I think there's a lot of work involved in this for them, because you have to read the situation as it's in front of you. Like, how many are back? Who's back? Was Declan Hannan a covering player there? Was Tadhg De Burka back? He would have cut him off. You know, so if Steve Bennett shoots from 25 yards, but there's three defenders in front of him, has he been denied a goal score, or has he been denied a shot, if you like, at the goal? Which is different than a goal score opportunity.
You've Nicky Quaid in your goal, like, sorry Mark, just you've Nicky Quaid in your goal. You're saying, shoot away Nicky from 25 yards.
Exactly.
Okay, but like, okay, so you being a manager of the team, right, and you see Will O'Donoghue hauling down Stephen Bennett, right? Would you be not of the opinion, this Jesus, Will, what did you give? Like, okay, if the scores were level, right? The score was level and time was up, and it's even been a racist throw, and Will, I don't know who did the tackle he did there, with three defenders in front of him yet to be tackled, you'd be distraught with Will O'Donoghue for pulling them down.
Yeah, and look again, if you watch it again, when O'Donoghue stops him, if you like, it's then that the boys kind of flurry back around. The point being, I suppose, that if O'Donoghue, that one might have been unnecessary, given the fact that, let's take the context into situation as well. Like, they were 8 points up, I think, Limerick, 9 points up. I think it's 67 minutes or 68 minutes, so... You know,
it was a nothing thing in Ireland, was it?
Exactly. You know, it's a different context. So it's going to be hard to police. That's all I say. And I think it's going to lead for all your discussions on Monday mornings for the year. I guarantee you, a lot of them will be centered around it.
And Derek, in the moment for that referee, right, just what you spoke about there, right, to see is this clear? That's going to be near impossible to decide, because like, you're going to need the benefit of a replay. You're going to need, was he true on goal? If that pass got through, like, jeez, I think this is a recipe for disaster, Dale. I can see go the other way. If your team is 2 points up, right, and next thing the referee gives a cynical foul that wasn't really a foul at all, look at how good some of the players, and I even read during the week about how good that some people are now perfecting that, getting under the hurley and locking it in and winning that free and bringing another fella to the ground. Like, some of the players are really, really good at that now. Like, right? Jeez, I don't know. I think we're opening a can of worms here, Dale.
Yeah, and like the weekend of that Congress, lads, and I just printed it out there. I was reading it last night and looking this morning. There was a Radio 1 debate. I don't know if any of you heard it, but it was James Owens on as a referee. They had a defender called Jackie Turlan, fair bit won a cornerback, and then Dotsie O'Callaghan on, who was your corner forward, as clean as a whistle. No, he was clever. I know, so Dotsie, he was clever and good man to draw the free, as we'd say, about a good corner forward. And it was great to be able to talk, you know, because you really three key people in the whole mindset. And like, James Owens was kind of welcoming it to a fair extent. I'm not so sure he was welcoming the sending off bit of it. But my take on it from listening to them and that, you have to be brought to ground as well. So like Jackie made the point that if he could hold Dotsie up, he could drag him back, but he could hold him up. Technically, it couldn't be put off and it couldn't be a penalty. Like, and Jackie, good bit bigger and stronger than Dots. Now, you know, like, and they were two, they debated over and back. What if? But my, for me, the essence of it is wrong, right? I go back to the first one I mentioned there. Paddy Purcell gets the ball. Like, Dublin are ahead. Leash are giving good account of themselves. There's no way. If the ref can say, you stopped, like, Paddy Purcell was going to go try and draw Owen O'Donnell, throw it in over his head, and full forward together and try and beat Alan Nolan. Now, that was a good few things that had to go right. The pass had to be perfect. The full forward had to collect. And he had to beat a really good goalie. Like, for me, if Danny Sutcliffe knew that that might have been a penalty, even though it was 42 metres out, maybe, but the ref said, clear goal scoring chance, penalty. I think there's no way Danny Sutcliffe would have caught his hurley shot and tripped your man. And I don't think if he thought his team was going to be put down to 14, there's no way. But I think the penalty is enough. I think we should leave it to the ref. There's no way inside the 21 over in the corner, lads, that we can ever call that a cynical goal scoring chance. Sure, any defender is going to say, you keep him there, keep him there, you have him there.
Yeah.
I think the essence of it is wrong.
My hope is that in the process of the defender trying to be as honest as possible, that he doesn't end up pulling the fella down, if you know what I mean, if that makes sense. You know, in the process of being honest, in the process of being absolutely putting his body on the line and tackling him well, that the forward kind of falls on top of him, and next minute they're on the ground, and now it's deemed a cynical foul. You know, kind of, and that's the hope for me, that it doesn't end up in discussions on that.
And I suppose one of the bit of defending, Derek, over the last few years, that's always highlighted. And I think J.J. Delaney just be smirking when he sees it highlighted. His hook on Shamie Callan at the time. It was Shamie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And like I'd say, J.J. didn't even think about that. I mean, a hook to J.J. Delaney was just simple hook. But just say J.J. had timed that slightly wrong and maybe got a little bit close to Shamie, tipped him on the back while hooking him, and Shamie goes over. And there's a penalty awarded there, like. That's what I think you're coming from, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant attempt to really do the genuine bit of defending that's in the rule book and everything. We just timed it slightly wrong. But how do we... it's like everything. Like, it's like being on the line, lads. We're going to get it wrong. It's like being on the field and making a decision to give a ball to a fella when there was another ball on. We're going to get it wrong at times. And I think we can't take away that spontaneity out of the game either.
Then you're into the consistency across the refereeing spectrum, right? Like, what referee deems what to be cynical against the other referee. Like, if you take the advantage rule, which came in, which is a very good rule, I think some referees, and we'll always be trying to find out what way does this guy referee the advantage rule, right? You can have a cornerback coming out with the ball, right? Two fellas hanging off him, and the referees there giving the advantage and saying, Jesus, will you just give him the free? Do you know what I mean? And then at the other end of the field, a fella breaks the line and the referee blows the whistle because it's free. And so that piece... and a very clear message from the referees to say, this is what we're looking for. This is what we deem cynical. But for me, I'm not in favour of the way it is right now.
Yeah. But I suppose, TJ, the other side of that is that we must give the referee as much help as possible. So he has two linesmen, he has four umpires, and he has the technology. And I think within 60 seconds, maybe 90 seconds, they can come to a clear decision. And it is a big decision to be... making, giving a penalty or maybe giving a black card. They are big decisions to be made. And in all the big decisions, it is worth taking the time to get the decision right.
Yeah, but in the current rules now, Mark, the umpire and the linesman cannot give anything, right?
Yeah.
I think when Derek was referring to fellas like me, they're honest defenders, right? I think that you're going to have... you're going to have cases where once the rule and the law comes out specific, you're going to have back to Jackie Turrell to say he didn't go to the ground, he didn't follow. And I believe as well, Dale, that if you pull the hurley out of a man's hand, it's not going to be deemed cynical, which is probably one of the most cynical of them all. Right? So you're going to have that whole consistency of decision making across the board.
Yeah, I think Derek Derek could be right. We could be a lot of Monday mornings chatting about this. TJ, you were dirty in the forwards, never mind in the back. So you just put that to rest.
I like Derek's description there, an honest defender.
Honest defender.
Yeah. Oh, God, lads, we won't solve it, I suppose. We have opinions. One of the ones that's changed as well, Darren, I would have had, if I can go back, geez, I'd have to go back 30 years now. But if I can go back, and I was on the Clare 21s, I was captain my last year, and I was on the senior team panel, whatever. I'd have hated to have to make a choice, like, about playing with the lads my own age, I come out of minor with, and you know, that was huge. And we wound up losing to Limerick in the park. Kieran Carey wrote to me, TJ, you'll be glad to know. But he was in the forwards that time. I was glad to see him going back as well, a bit like yourself. But, you know, I'd have hated, now that's been taken away from us now. We saw it in the football as well. And kind of degrading that grade, isn't it? I thought,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. And look, I felt it. Giving a fella, putting that responsibility on a fella to make choices at that age as well, you know, it's and look, again, going back to what we talked about earlier about freshers and memories of groups, if you like, you're with the one group growing up and then you may have to leave that group as well. Look, I think it's unnecessary. I think it's some things are unnecessary, and that's one of the things that are unnecessary, if you like.
Yeah. What do you think, lads?
Oh, 100% behind Derek there. Like David Clifford and Sean O'Shea were the biggest example of that a number of years ago. They played senior in the county for Kerry and won the low played under 21 into the Kerry. Like, they take the best players from their underage team because they've been rewarded for playing a match with their into the county team is all wrong. It does not justify. Now, the only thing I would say, I'm not 100% certain whether the rule is, Anthony, if your inter-county team is still left in competition. That was the rule last year. Whether that has changed. So in other words, Shane Barrett now, for example, for Cork, he came on against Dublin for a couple of minutes, which was tricky now, right? He was still, the under 21 wasn't played, then Cork were knocked out, and then he played in the Munster under 20 final. But he would have, if Cork was still left in the championship and the under 21 match was played, he would have been ruled out from playing that under 20 match.
In last year's?
Yes. Because
it wasn't in last year.
What was in last year is Shane Barrett played for 2 minutes against Dublin, and if Cork Senior was still left in the championship, he was ruled out of playing the rest of the 20th championship.
I didn't think it was in last year.
That part was in last year. Okay. I think what has moved on now is that once you play senior and you're under 20, you're gone from the under 20 team.
Yeah, it's aligned to the football rule now for definitely.
Yes.
Okay.
But there was a halfway house last year.
Yeah, two things for me, Dello. I fully believe, right, this is only inter-county now. This is not in the club scene, because obviously we cause carnage there, right? So this is only inter-county number one. What is the theory behind the thinking here? Like, is it burnout? Is it
burnout.
Just
burnout.
Yeah. Burnout. Yeah, you know the way, like, we saw a lot, you know, when the championship was round robin, and then we got into the kind of latter stages. We had a lot of lads playing again on the Wednesday night, hadn't we, in the under 21? No, I don't think anyone had any problem with it. Like, most teams had a few lads on the panel. Clare and Waterford, we had a few on the panel. You had a few on the panel that played the Wednesday night. You didn't train them, obviously. They went back to the 21 panel on the Sunday night, and they just were part of their panel and went out and hurled hard on the Sunday. The young fellas loved it. You know, and a lot of them weren't getting the game on the senior, and they were dying for matches. Yeah. Like, I just qualified this, Derek, a quick one. Was I marked Fergal Hegarty in Croke Park in a training session 26 years ago, 2 weeks and 3 days out from the All-Ireland final, and our lads were playing Thurles in the Munster final, and four of us, Gerlach Nan decided this was historic, and we weren't taking a chance with four of them. Frank Lohan, yeah. I think Eamon Taft, Stephen McNamara, I think they were the four, Fergal Hegarty. Stephen Hago lettered each other as he'd want. And like, we got news from Thurles back that the boys were only beaten a goal, I think, without the four boys by a tip team with Tommy Dunn. And like, for me, like, it's just, that was, there's a historic, you know, precedence, like, that is known. But I suppose for Clare, that was, we'd never been in that situation before. And look, man made a call, all justified in by winning the senior, I suppose.
There's also the situation where a fella's at the tail end of a senior panel, he gets a few runs and his confidence is low and he likes to go back to his buddies to play at his own level, and it does his confidence and his hurling and his club even game the world. But how many times have you... I was only at the tail end of the water panel there in 98 now, and you go back to the club or you go back to the under-20s or the 21s at that stage, and you'd love going back there because you feel you could bring some of the experience you've garnered at senior level back to that your own age group, and you're amongst your own friends that you've grown up since Tony Forrester. And you know, you're taking that away, really. And, you know, hoit the madness.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. The other thing that all referees in Galway, anyway, I can say direct straight out, that's a big one, is that the Muir Foreigners are gone. They're gone from the field. There's a lad, Turlough Moore, Big Barry Cullen, to the speech to the show. Hey, Barry, if you're listening now, I'll be staying over my own side this year. Don't worry, kid. But, like, there was a big presence in a Muirishka in Galway over the last 3 years. Oh, all justified by bringing home the cup every year, like, as well. But they're gone now off the field. What you make of that, Mark?
I suppose, look, a lot of it had to do with the Gregory incident between Kilkenny and Galway a number of years ago. It was highlighted.
Greg Kennedy.
Yeah. But I think TJ Reid didn't stand over to him, like, you know. I think in some situations the Muir Foreigners were abusing their position. They probably were entering the field a bit too often. They were making it awkward, I think, on the football side of things, where they were appearing where maybe a keeper was trying to kick the ball into that section. No, I hadn't realised that until I saw it in the Sunday game one night. I think it's a down. It's not a help to the management of any team that you can't get a message into the team or at the far side of the pitch. I don't think that's helpful now, because when you're playing with 30, 40, 50, you just can't get messages to the players, which is, I think, that is a downfall. But look, if the GAA had maybe suspended a couple of more Muir Foreigners or maybe fined them, would have put manners on them or something like that? I don't know, like, you know. But certainly, I think it's a step backwards. But it's probably of the Muir Foreigners doing that it actually has come to this. Like,
so would you say it's down to TJ Ryan? Like,
and himself and his buddies, I suppose. Like, you know.
TJ, you'll miss. Well, you were pulled out anyway, and you've put the under 15 referees in Limerick. Like, but they ain't for a handier time now as well.
I will have to say that definitely misunderstood here. I got sent off in the county final in Galway for stepping onto the pitch by Christy.
You never played in Galway in your life, but you got sent off.
That's enough. Yeah, I thought Christy was hashing me that day. I had words in afterwards. Where am I on this? I'm going to link this to the wall of breaks, Dale. Right,
which I hate. Now I'm going to say straight up, I hate them. Yeah.
I think that from a management point of view, if the water break stays, right, and halfway through each half that you can enforce and maybe a tactical change in a collective area, I think you could live without the Muir Foreigners, right? I think if the water breaks go after COVID, and I don't know what the thinking behind that is, I think the full 35 minutes, right, without the Muir Foreigners getting that pitch will be troublesome for management, right? Trying to communicate, let's say, a couple of line changes or maybe a tactical change or whatever without a Muir Foreigners is going to lead to issues. What I could see, right, we were talking about this at home the other night, right, is are you going to see a situation, let's say, with 10 minutes to go in the first half, some player is going to go down, the doctor is going to become a mini Muir Foreigners, right, and he's going to basically go in and treat Derek and say, right, lads, he's okay, right, here is the change coming in. And in fairness, that's the way, like, modern people, modern coaches and modern management think. They think outside the box as to how am I going to get my communication through. So where am I on it? I think if the water break stays, I'm okay with it. Without the water break, I see it as an issue.
Okay. And to the suit of the likes of Dr. Conn, Mark, wouldn't it? If he could have gone on and made a few changes. He was making the changes.
He made all the changes, for God's sake. There was no manager made a change without the doc saying so, for God's sake. No, I'm all for the water breaks, but as I said last year, I think the inter-county game should move back up to 80 minutes, and I think we should have 4 20-minute quarters. That's what we should have been. There's too much time in it for going in by the inter-county lads, like 70 minutes. It's great. Like, it is, and as you know, we covered this last year, it is going into 77, 78, 79 minutes anyway. So I don't understand. Go up to 420s would be my view, and keep the water breaks. You have your on-field discussion for 5 or 6 minutes, and I wouldn't have two. I think 2 minutes is too short. Give them 3 or 4 minutes, and then have your half-time break. Give them 15 minutes.
Too much American football, little.
Oh, he's watching too much rugby. He was on about it already, sure. There'll be 80 minutes gone now, and we'll see Declan Hannan turn around and belting the ball up into the stand. We've won, lads.
Yeah.
No more players. I saw you with the Harriers a couple of times last year. We were all streaming last year. First time I really saw the Wexford Championship. Like, the water break. Like, what? Get one good message in. Was that the... mean, you can hardly be confused, I think.
And you know, sometimes, because you know there's a break coming, you think you have to be pre-programmed for it. Sometimes you just wouldn't say anything. You know, I think sometimes it's either well kind of managed, and you see the dub footballers have the backs and forwards separated, and everyone has teams, and Limerick are very organised as well. But I think I heard you discussing it last year. There was one stage in the Munster final where Kylie just pushed the tactics board aside at the very last quarter break, water break, and kind of maybe huddled in and kind of said, so I think, but I'd be very disappointed now with the Mayor Fiorna being dissipated, I have to say, because even from, you know, watching it, I find it's fascinating to watch Kinnerk or Bulfin or any of these people that are involved with the teams, to see them initiate a change and see how that affects the game then. And watching that as a spectator, I would have been enthralled by it. Even watching your own man for years in Dublin there, Dalo, Hedgehog, yeah. And Dan, even with myself, I thought they brought a bit of theatre to it. They brought a bit of kind of excitement to it. Now, I accept Mark's point that they're probably overstepping the line, but I think there could have been more done to kind of, you know, to kind of maybe just give them a smack on the wrist and kind of say, I think we're underestimating the contribution that these people make to the actual quality of the game that we have. You know, I remember watching Kinnerk going in with Richie McCarthy a couple of years ago when he was going in at the end of the game with Limerick, and he was just running alongside of Richie McCarthy. Mikey Casey had gone off with an injury, I think, and he was just giving him his instructions, and they were changing their formation for a few minutes. And just being able to watch that, I just don't understand it really. And I think what it will lead to is TJ's point. You'll have people that will be appointed to management teams now that will be unofficial selectors. You know, there's a thing in the GA rules where your Mayor Ishka can't be an official member of your management or whatever. You know, your Mayor Ishkas and your Mayor Commons. I think what you'll see is your hurling carriers will now be unofficial selectors, and they'll be part of your coaching team as opposed to, named selectors with the county board, if you like. And I think people will find a way, the innovators will find a way, if you like. But the water breaks, I'm not in favour of them. If we could find a way post-COVID of leaving the halves flow and having a Mayor Ishkas and them having their say as part of the management team, I'd be okay. But I'm not in favour of the management of the water breaks. I just don't like the break in momentum in any section of the half, first or second half. So I'd be kind of anti water break, to be honest with you.
Are they going to go to a timeout, Dale, or something? Anyway, Dale, I was going to ask you a question there. Surely you send the Mayor Fiorna down telling the corner forward, the corner back, if he doesn't get his finger out, right, the next 2 minutes, he's going to be out here beside me. How do you get that message without the Mayor Fiorna?
Well, I tell you, he retired there, did the year, Paul Ryan, you know, great character, Paul Ryan, like, you know, great man. What a man over a dead ball. And what hands he had as well, some of the scores he got, you know, a couple of goals in the Leinster final, mighty up. But, like, I kind of give up on sending Hedgehog down to Paul Ryan for a finish, like, because Reiner, like, you know, Reiner get a ball, like, and if you nearly send down the instruction, tap it over, everything tapped over, keep the scoreboard going, you know, Reiner definitely go for a goal if he was told go for a point. And so I said, there was no point confusing the whole issue. And I said, lads, they do whatever he wants. Like, I said, why did you tell him go for a goal? I never told him to go for anything. After 2 years of him were over, now, he was away in 09, but 10 and 11, like, after that, I just said, I'll let Reiner do whatever he wants. So, and I, there's some great images there. There, me and you, like, as managers on the line, never got to have a row. It was either Hedgehog and Dan, or me and Dan, or you and Hedgehog. That was never mattered, like, you know. So it was like, and I think when you said it there, Saoirse Bulfin obviously is obviously one of the ones, like, who, you know, tell you, did Saoirse Bulfin got fair fit TJ under Davy Fitz? Like, we thought it was Davy. At times running into the feet, like, but himself and Tommy Dunne in the Ireland semi final last year, there, right? I we're in the RTE box, like down that corner of the field, as you know, like they're at the Canal End. Jesus, like Tommy now wouldn't be that confrontational, let's say, but obviously Liam was saying, hey, if that foot goes in, you get in quick as well. Like, so there was Tommy hearing across the 21-yard line. And yeah, I thought it brought drama, and even TJ and Barry Conan was one of the best moments. just absolute magic TV. Yeah. Well, that's great stuff. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with the fantasy hurling this year, as we presume it'll come in for the championship for definitely. I don't know whether the lads in Oanrua or Irua up there in Tyrone, in Dungannon, are planning to do it for the league now, because they'll have to wait to see the format. But there, I know when your dad was ill last year, you took a bit of a back seat from everything. And just like to reassure you, you still finished ahead of Mark without changing your team, using any of your transfers. Have you been discussing it at home or anything, Mark? Or any lads and kids?
No, I tell you, the best thing that came in the last lockdown was the 5K limit. And you couldn't drop the wooden spoon down to me.
I have it.
You have it. You're opening up the pub again now soon, hopefully, in the very best. Do you know what you do now with the wooden spoon? Go and frame that now, boy. And you can, at least you can say you got something from Cork.
Well, I might put it into a corner and call it Lander's Corner, maybe. I was thinking of that, like, you know.
The pod corner. Put it in there. Definitely. Yes. Definitely.
So we've all that crack to look forward to as well.
Before you move on,
teacher.
A lot of stuff going on under the cover about Clare GAA. Is that a story for another day, it is?
What's this?
I tell you.
Did you hear something about Clare?
A lot of little innuendos and stories and agendas and county board votes and different stuff and all that. So will we leave that for another day, will we?
I think there'll be a more in-depth view from the examiner, whether it's here or in the paper, TJ. But TJ, yesterday, for the second time in 6 weeks, I think we got a break from the Sunday newspapers about Clare GAA, and nothing got to do with Tony Kelly or Shane O'Donnell or David McInerney or any of the great players we have. And for me, that's, you know, was a relief, but also all wrong as well, you know. And look, I think there's probably going to have to be change in Clare GAA. There is change. There's all these new committees, but, you know, some of the stuff, TJ, to be honest, that was coming out there would upset me. Do you know? I mean, I came on to the Clare's panel 31 years ago, whatever, and it kind of brought me back to that, to be honest. You know, I know there was no emails 31 years ago, but, you know, 29 unanswered emails, cutting locks to get into Cusick Park, trying to pay for meals below Wexford, stuff like that. Like, I just thought that shambles was gone. And, like, I was Clare manager for 3 years and I didn't have any of that. So I know now when I was there, we were in the middle of the boom, I suppose, and maybe things were easier. But look, Club Clare have made a major effort to relaunch and kind of, well, they were there now as well, but like really reinvigorate. I was thinking about this like last night maybe, and you look at maybe the greatest example of us. Maybe some counties need, TJ, a very strong supporters club. And the greatest example in Ireland, Club Tyrone, we had a success set up under Mickey Hart, and, you know, their centre of excellence is just incredible up there, like, and Garvahy, is it? But like ours is a shambles in Carlow. And so Club Clare, I think there's been a great uptake and they're trying to drive it on. And you saw the whole initiatives in Offaly over the weekend. I think they raised over 200 grand and counting with the Canal Walk thing and Michael Dignan, tremendous driver there. I think we need to look at the whole thing. And some other allegations, nobody has any ideas. Well, look, I won't get into that innuendo.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
Well, there, it, yeah. But joining us, Delos, in modern day hurling, like a top level club action now, right, and top level in the county, right? Like it's a massive business. There's a huge platform of areas to be covered and to give the team every chance of success on the field, right? And that can be from S&C to nutrition to headspace to even like employment and way of life. And it's just a massive area for teams to cater for, right? And the way I'll come back is I just think that if boards at club level and county level aren't on a platform where they're there to make things better year on year on year, right? Well, then I think you're going to struggle. And that's the key area for me. And I'm at home in my own club trying to, like, we put a gym in place this year and just trying to give a platform where we're going to try and make the teams of the future that little bit better and at least give them the opportunity. And for me, it's very simple that if you're in a situation that where you're trying to explain this to somebody who doesn't understand, you're in butter, like, right? Like, no explanation is possible to somebody who doesn't understand what's required here. And that's the simple facts of the matter for me. And it does disappoint me. Like, I thought Clare, in fairness, were very, very good in the championship last year. I thought that Lohan did a great job. And tactically, they were good. To me, they seem to be making strides. And they would be a team that you'd be putting down for, like, can they make the next step? Like, we can speak about Waterford and all these other teams down the road. But for Clare, they would need all the help they can get on all those fronts. And if they're not getting that, well, then it just makes life a little bit more difficult.
And I think, Mark, just before you say it, like, I don't know, you were through your issues, like, obviously, over the years, a few strikes. And I think Partey just coming from there, like, there needs to be a holistic approach now at inter-county level, like, that lads are, you know, I saw it in Dublin, lads, and it's easy to, I managed Dublin 6 years with them, and there was a holistic approach, like, in terms of players and helping them achieve the very best they could achieve on the field. And I just think that needs to come into play. If you're at the top level anyway and you have ambitions, have to have it.
Yeah, but was Costello there when you were there, Anthony, was he?
He was. John Costello's been there originally, longer than I was there now, yeah.
Like, I've no doubt that a fella like him at the helm was a huge help to the management of the hurling and the football and progressing the inter-county scene. But it's hard enough to win matches and prepare teams without something dragging you off your ear, which is the manager sending in 29 emails and none of them being responded. Or when you turn up to the training field and you have to cut the locks off the gate to get in. You don't need that hassle. That's like coming home at night and all the doors are locked and there's glue inside and all the keyholes and you can't get in.
That only happened occasionally. She's still with me.
Fair play. But we've been through with Anthony and it's not nice. And the first strike that happened in Cork was a players versus the county board. It was nothing else. It was a straight shootout between the players, and the players were on their own. And I made this point to you. I would never want the players in any county to have to do what our set of players did at that time. Whereas we were young men then. Myself, Fergal Ryan were the eldest. We were 27, 28. When I got down to the likes of Jordine and, Sully and them, 21, 22 years of age, taking on the county board on their own. It is not the place of the players to be driving it. It is the place of the county board representatives from each club to be driving the agenda, as far as I'm concerned. And if the club delegates can see it themselves, and we remove club delegates in our county here because they were aligned to the county board. And when you had delegates in our county that would go down to their own committee meetings and be given instructions going to vote in a certain way, and they still voted with their own personal feelings, which was time to remove those fellas immediately. And of course, some of those fellas wouldn't be talking to this day. But look, come here. When they thought they were bigger than the club, it was time to be moving them on.
Yeah, I suppose Gerlach Nan made a comment about the delegates years ago, putting more sort of growing material on top of them. The more you can give them, the better they get. But look, someone has to do it, I suppose. Just in Clare, I'd have been disappointed there. We had a delegate, that's a good guy, stood up and asked a few questions, and not another delegate opened his mouth. Just silence in the room, and we're moving on. So, lads, there was no one else. But as regards Carlow now, let's say there's a good few committees. They say a rogue committee is coming in Clare, my independent guys, and they're, I think, willing to take suggestions from anybody out there that's affiliated to the GA and listen to them and see can they bring them forward or not, as they see fit. But as regards Carlow, the board put a committee in place, headed up by Simon Moroney. Now, Simon B, former secretary, the Munster County, top official, I would say. And for me, I'd be inclined to say that's a fantastic committee. They'll get Carlow right. Because if Simon commits to something like that, he'd usually do it. But I think that holistic approach, Derek, is massive for our players and that, isn't it? Do you know that they feel there's something special, not that anyone's trying to drag them back.
Yeah, and I think it probably would have been scoffed upon 7 or 8 years ago when you talk about holistic development of young lads. And I think it's just a complete reflection of society, I suppose, in general. Just how things have changed for the pathway of the modern player, if you like. And it's ensuring that there's alignment with the people above you, around you, supporting you. And if there's alignment and a similar thought process, we're not talking about a situation where you have everything you absolutely need to the point where it breaks somebody. You're not talking about unreasonable stuff, but you're talking about people on the same wavelength in terms of the thought process. Where do we need to go? And it also, it takes time. It's ironic we're talking about it on the morning where the debate is about Stephen Kenny and the FAI as regards what Stephen Kenny is trying to do and, what the FAI perhaps are trying to align in terms of support that's available to him in terms of all the way down to the academy levels, if you like. So you're looking at the psychological development of the players. You're looking at the nutritional development, the strength and conditioning, and you want them to have fun as well on the way. You want them to still be able to go back to Gary Spillane or Clare Castle or Killa or De La Salle and be able to say, I love being up in the club. So that's the whole thing. That's what we're all trying to do, I suppose. And for that to happen, you need people of similar thinking across all the facets of your club and your county executive. And I think sometimes epiphany moments create these things, but I think it's just time to drive forward now and look to the future as much as anything else in creating that. and an acceptance of that. Because if you said that years ago, if I went into my club even 10 years ago and said, look, I think we should be looking at the mental health of some of the lads. You know, we should be looking at their, maybe giving them some educational support. You might get the answer 10, 15 years ago. Sure, if they can't cope with the pressures being out in the field, they won't cope with, you know. Whereas now it's a little bit of a different approach needed. And I'm glad that that's been accepted within the higher echelons of it has to be accepted. Whether it is being accepted, it has to be accepted within the higher echelons of the GA that's the process. And I think it is being, to be fair.
Yeah, it's look, as we want. I suppose if you don't have an AIG, a Tenio, a Limerick set up, TJ, a Kerry group, you probably do need a really independent, strong, not independent, linked, obviously, it has to be linked. And with this Club Clare, the vice chairman, Kieran Keaton, I think, is on Club Clare. He's one of the top guys in it, and Brian Lohan is in it, and independent people are in it there. You know, ex-minister Tony Killeen, Pat Kyo, James's wife Caroline, who's top accountant in the council. So, that's a great group, and they will drive on. Deirdre Murphy, all these people, Johnny Cannon, they'll drive on. I think that's probably the way I'd look at that Tyrone thing and say, you might not have the massive sponsor. Pat O'Donnell has been tremendous for Clare. Like, if you don't have that massive, sponsor there, you do need that driving force. And I don't, Limerick are always fundraising as well, TJ. And they're often thrown up there as the example.
There is. I think I'm watching The Crown at the moment, right? And the whole administration. And
lockdown has gone on too long, man.
Yeah. I think, be a fan of Philip, in fairness.
I've never seen him.
You were probably watching Oprah a couple of weeks ago as well, were you?
No, I didn't see that. But to answer the question, I think part of the problem with the GAA, and I won't say it's a problem, it's just an old adage, right? In every committee, county board, club, up and down the country, what I would call is just ticket and tay boys, right? That they're just there. Once they get their ticket and once they get the tay at half time, they'll vote with the crown. They will do that all day long, right? They're not thinking on the vision of the future. And like, you go back to the GAA, someone had the vision to build Crow Park back in the late 80s, early 90s, right? There are clubs up and down this country, right, that have facilities that are just unbelievable. That needs vision. And every county has a huge facility to raise money. There's clubs raising hundreds of thousands of to keep themselves afloat, right? I think in a county setup, once they believe that everything is run correctly and that everyone is happy and the inter-county teams are being prepared in the best possible way, there are people like in counties who will believe that an S&C guy for your under-15s and 16s and 17s, why would you be doing that, right? And all of a sudden now you're explaining, you're behind the curve, and that's the type of change that's required. As Derek said, they're on the mental side of it. So it's just that complete overview approach. And when you're a top man, and it might have to come in the form of a group outside of the county board for your kind of, like, there's just different facets of the county board. There's player development, there's team development, there's facilities, then there's club fixtures. But if you've got somebody at the head of an organization that wants the best for Clare, football hurlers, that those teams are prepared from underage all the way through, whether it's food, nutrition, S&C, coaching, the next manager, all that. If somebody's not doing that in a very structured way, you have a potential to be behind the curve. I would say Dublin are definitely the chip leaders at the moment.
And in fairness, Taylor, to Waterford GA announced their strategic plan a number of weeks ago. Like, they had top men involved, Fergal Hartley, ex-player, Michael Walsh, city council manager here. And the leadership shown by Sean Michael in the chair there and Pat Flynn, they have the vision, I suppose, of what's needed to be done. And they have a brilliant incentive for kids on Saturday mornings in clubs called Well Kids. And they put great strategy and great time into the development of it. And, they're leading the charge in that regard. And again, we as I suppose, patrons of the GAA or club members, normal club members, it just takes time to implement that. And you need to have the patience to be able to. But once it's been done in the right way, as it is being by Waterford GAA, and it shows great leadership as well from the exec to be able to step back and say, hang on, we'll leave this to this crowd now because they're experts in this field and we'll be able to link in with them where necessary. And I think that's a good sign always,
Yeah. And in our own county here, and see two major things have happened on the financial side of things. In Cork, the Rebel Bounty draw has been a massive success. And I can tell you when Kevin O'Donovan and Tracy Kennedy lodged Rebel Bounty, there was of negativity towards it. They just basically put a number on, whether you're a junior, intermediate, or senior, so 50, 70, and 100 tickets had to be sold. Anything sold above that, then the club kept the funds. And it has put about 1.9 million euros back into clubs' pockets in the space of about 9 months. So that has been a fantastic success. And the other thing that has been launched is One Cork, which is basically Teddy Owens, Michael O'Flynn, and Kevin O'Donovan again. Rather than, you know, an individual or a sponsor being dragged from, you know, one or two or three different areas, just come together as one group, one person, make one approach to an individual and get, we say, whatever the figure is going to be. So that there are two massive things that have happened in Cork in the last 12 months on the financial side of it. And we, above all, the company, our finances are in, not, I wouldn't say great shape after the stadium. But we're going to solve it ourselves. That's the reality.
Yeah, that's why you want the matches gone out to 80 minutes so that everyone goes to the park. It'd be like American football. You'll be there for about 5 hours, like everyone drinking a few beers, the whole lot. But I tell you, the ticket and tear fellas will have no hope in Cork, TJ. That's great stuff. Great, great. And Derek, thrilled to have you with us. And just in case any clear people are listening to this, we don't, like, there's a lot made of the Limerick Academy and all that. I worked in that. Like, there's fantastic work going on in Clare, underage. And, you know, don't worry, there's loads of work going on for football and hurling. We are, you know, just a few issues that have been highlighted. And I guess I just want to make people that I know of that there's fantastic work going on at county level, club level, and we won't be left that far behind. And I think you're right, TJ. We weren't that bad last year and, you know, could hopefully kick on. Great stuff, lads. Ticket and tear day to start it off. I think the plan is, until we maybe see action, lads, that we're going to be on a 2-week schedule. So we'll have Paul Rouse and the football lads next week, unless that's subject to change. I don't think it is. Kicking off as well. And like, they're a fantastic panel there as well. So anyone interested in that kind of thing, and they're just a great listen anyway, if you're out walking and stuff. And we've gone over time as usual, probably set the template for the year. Wi-Fi issues, broadband issues. Larry Ryan is after promising me a new cable up here, Tully Crine, anyway, in West Clare. So, lads, if the cable is coming up, I'd urge anyone from Dara to Lissy Casey out along the road, lads. It's coming up from the Irish Examiner. So, link in the houses up along the way. It'll be finished here down in Murty Browns. We'll have an official opening for the cable feed. No more Clare Wi-Fi. If you're listening to this, I'm sorry, lads, but we gave you a good enough dig out when we could. Great stuff, lads. Pleasure as always. And Derek, enjoy the holidays. Take it easy. And we'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you, boys.